This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. That's easy to remember. Radio program
at AOL.com.
How many years have I been saying that?
How are you doing, Dr. Hoffman?
Good, good. Thank you. How about you? Adjusting to 2020?
Yeah. Well, you know, writing down the full date on the full year on a check, for
That's the tough part, right.
All right.
So, before we get to questions, just a couple of observations. There's a study out in the Annals of Internal Medicine, you know, about electronic medical records. And, you know, I'm a Luddite when it comes to electronic medical records. Unlike many of my colleagues, I have not adopted electronic medical records. Mm-hmm. It's cumbersome.
Yeah.
I run through a lot of pens. I have to constantly order paper for patient notes, and then the storage. Storage is an issue because we need shelves to keep our files on.
Right. But
I like the feel of writing pen to paper and looking a patient in the eye while I take their history.
That's the biggest thing, is the looking at the patient instead of at the screen, and it's very,
So there's a study in the Annals of Internal Medicine that has come up with an amazing statistic, which is that electronic medical records cost 16 minutes per patient encounter.
Wow.
So if you think that the average patient encounter generously is 18 minutes or 22 minutes or something as abbreviated as that, that's actually a luxuriating kind of visit for some people in high volume practices. You just don't have that much time with patients.
No.
16 minutes of that is spent feeding the monster. Feeding the electronic medical record, checking boxes, filling out forms.
Right.
And what it's about is about achieving reimbursement. Because if you document, you check enough boxes and you fill out enough codes and provide enough diagnoses and procedure codes, then you up your likelihood of getting reimbursement. Because it's between you and the computer and the people who, you know, it's actually an algorithm that review the submission and then they spit back a payment at you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, like trained seals, you know, jumping for a piece of herring, doctors fill out their electronic medical records. And, you know, it's obligatory because if you are involved with an insurance system or it's only involved with Medicare, you need electronic medical records. You have to align with that system. We don't.
No.
Call
so there's one area that we can't get hacked.
Call me a Luddite. Well, you know. Maybe, you know, my brain could be directly hacked, you know. So, yeah, that's another thing. That's the other thing is about the confidentiality of the records. It's lately been revealed that Google is making big inroads into the healthcare field. And what it's about is, it's about information.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, let's say your information isn't worth very much. Maybe I give you $5 to fill out a very, very lengthy form about all your medical encounters throughout your life. You'd say, get out of here. $5?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But what if I were to say, I would like to crunch data for basic research, say, on 30 million patients at $5 a pop. That's $150 million.
Yeah.
Owning that information would be of value, wouldn't it?
It would.
Yeah. With all the statistics that you can generate and, you know, that's so... Google is trying to, I mean, and actually other companies are trying to cash in on that. When, you know, I noticed 23andMe keeps sending me emails saying, would you like to support medical research? Fill out this yet another questionnaire. First, you have to fill out a questionnaire for them, and then they want more questionnaires. They don't care about that lousy, whatever, $99 that you paid for your genetic analysis.
Mm-hmm.
They want to link your genes to a very vast repository of information about every aspect of your health, which is a saleable commodity.
Yeah.
Even if they anonymize it, even if they maintain your anonymity, they're not going to say, Dr. Hoffman's insurance company or his, life insurance company or his future employer, I'm going to sell you this information. There's supposedly laws in place to prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
But all this information is of value, ultimately. And Google is getting into it. And then they have this wearing devices that tell you everything about your body.
Right.
You know,
Fitbits and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and eventually you'll pee in a toilet and they'll tell you everything about your your metabolism. You know, they'll measure your...
Alkaline, acidic, protein,
hormones.
Red flag.
Right.
Okay.
You know.
Pregnant.
Smoking a little pot, huh?
Right.
Oh, some illicit drugs. Snorting a line of coke
toilet.
Here.
Smart toilet.
Right.
A smart
toilet. Information goes into the cloud.
Yeah.
And, right.
And off it goes.
Right.
Mm.
Did you do your...
Scary.
Did you do your 10,000 steps today?
I don't have a Fitbit.
Oh, okay.
But I probably did not do 10,000 steps today.
I find it, that whole thing is not that incentivizing for me. I do my exercise anyway.
Yeah.
I like to keep track of my pulse because I like to see, that I'm getting into the,
into your max zone,
that it's a worthwhile workout. It's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, to keep records and records and records of, what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe share it on the internet. Say like, man, look at this workout that I did.
Look at this. Yeah. Look at my recovery and my VO2 max and my,
I mean.
Some people get into that. I don't know.
Sharing. Oversharing.
TMI.
Oversharing. Okay, so let's get to questions.
We've got an interesting one here from Margaret. This is a question about mold detox. Hi, I'm looking for help. I had a toxic mold exposure 8 years ago. I've done Schumacher's protocol with CSM.
So let's define it a little bit. Toxic mold.
Toxic mold.
I mean, it's one thing if you, you go into, say, you're opening up your summer house. It's wintered over, you walk in and you go, well, this place is really moldy. There's the roof sprung a leak. There's a little mold in here.
Mm.
And you sneeze, your eyes burn, and it's bad.
Yeah.
But you don't have a complete health meltdown.
Right.
As some people do. They're highly sensitized to mold. Mold toxicity, not just allergy, is their problem.
Yeah.
And mold has horrible neurotoxins that it creates.
Yeah.
And we just saw a patient who's absolutely debilitated after a mold exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're challenging patients to treat because they become hypersensitized to everything.
Yeah.
They have cognitive symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Brain fog. And
this is by no means just confined to Stachybotrys, black mold, so-called killer mold. Which, by the way, a little historical fact, I often, recite this factoid.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the headline was in the New York Daily News on September 10th, 2001? Remember, September 10th was the day before there was bigger news.
Right. That
was what was the headline? The headline was killer mold.
Killer mold.
And it was about mold toxicity, in particular found in schools. This horrible black mold, which exposes teachers and students to this basically toxic stuff. Well, next day, we had bigger fish to fry, and that, that got blown off the pages of major newspapers. But it is a problem.
It is a problem. Oh, my gosh.
So, anyway, there's a guy named Richie Schumacher, and I've interviewed him.
Yeah.
And he's like an expert on mold.
Uh-huh.
Mold toxicity.
Yeah.
And he has innovative protocols for developing that. The sickest of the sick patients go see him.
Wow. Well, Margaret is saying she's done the protocol, but it's made her extremely sensitive to heat from the sauna and the hot tub. So soon after only a few minutes in either, I would get a headache and my liver felt aggravated.
Don't know how you, can't account for that, but those patients are...
Is it like the Austrians, they do this and drink the beer, their liver, I don't know, something like that. or I have done a lot of liver detox and plan to start next with an ozone machine.
Okay, so sauna is helpful for sweating out the toxins. Is ozone helpful? Well, some people purport that it's helpful, but ozone is a very high free radical challenge, which it either stimulates the body's defenses if given correctly, but if it's given excessively to a sensitive patient, it delivers a lot of free radicals into the body. I'm not sure if that's the ticket for you. Interesting, the other patient we saw the other day, she was contemplating ozone therapy.
Yes.
But to me, it's a little bit like hitting a Swiss watch with a hammer. You just don't know which way it's going to go.
Okay. Interesting. Any thoughts about other ways to detox my liver more fully or anything I should add? I really want to get back into my sauna.
I'm thinking glutathione, intravenous glutathione or oral N-acetylcysteine.
Yes.
Or oral glutathione, although there's some controversy about how well it's absorbed.
Mm-hmm. What about acetylcholine? There's a lot of amino acids also involved, other amino acids involved, B vitamins, zinc, magnesium.
Anything that helps the detoxification pathways. Mm-hmm. But then there's some people who have blockages in their ability to tolerate, say, sulfur-containing compounds like N-acetylcysteine or glutathione. They may have what's called a CBS mutation, which is a sulfuration step. And handling, and so they become sulfur sensitive.
Yeah.
These patients are challenging.
Yeah. Mm. Wow. So, Margaret, N-acetylcysteine, glutathione, IV glutathione. That's helpful. I remember you claiming that after a glutathione cocktail or drip, that your eyesight would get better.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. A film lifted off my eyes.
Wow. Margaret, best of luck to you. We hope you feel better soon. Well, this is another interesting one, Dr. Hoffman. This is from Deborah. What are some effective tactics for dealing with interstitial cystitis? I'm following the IC diet. A small bit of liquid Benadryl seems to help symptoms.
What is the IC diet, first of all?
The IC diet is a diet that eliminates foods that may aggravate or cause these interstitial cystitis or bladder symptoms.
So would they be spicy foods, or is it about oxalates?
It's more about
it's been proposed, the low oxalate diet has been proposed by Dr. Colin Campbell, is it? What is his name? Not Colin Campbell.
No.
He's the China study. No, Colin something or other was the guy who proposed the low oxalate diet for interstitial cystitis.
Yeah, that's actually very helpful.
Yeah.
But avoiding aged cheeses, chocolate, sour cream, for example, avoiding certain fruits. Like bananas.
Maybe a low histamine diet or something.
A lower histamine diet. Avoiding canned, cured, processed smoked meats and fish. This sounds like low histamine, all right. Avoiding alcoholic beverages. Yeah, these are things that can create histamine.
Mm-hmm.
Coffees and teas.
Yeah, I'm looking at just this is the official word on this. The effective diet on interstitial cystitis.
Yeah.
And it's, they say that they're the friendly fruits and the avoid fruits.
Yes.
Friendly fruits are, I guess, neutral, like
bananas, blueberries,
melons, pears, apples.
Mm-hmm.
But lemons, limes, oranges, grapefruit, strawberries, pineapple, and kiwi fruit are potential irritants.
Yes.
So it's interesting. You can even go to the official foundation, the American Urological Association, and they actually talk about that.
They do.
They say that milk and dairy is okay, which is not always, but
that's true.
They say avoid
milk and dairy may be okay, but certain aged cheeses, sour cream.
Avoid obviously alcohol.
Yeah.
It curiously, here's one. Avoid cranberry juice.
Yeah.
The very self same thing that you use for a UTI.
Yes.
A urinary tract infection. You might want to avoid when you're
isn't that something?
Yeah, dealing. So do you find that these recommendations are applicable, or do you find that patients have idiosyncratic food sensitivities that are not?
I've found both. I've found people to be helped with an IC diet and other people not. and had more to do with their own particular sensitivities. Others have been helped by a low oxalate diet as well, which is quite therapeutic, a low oxalate diet, surprisingly. I don't know why that surprises me, but that's really something. You know, you think about oxalate, you think about kidney stones, but it's good for that. So a low oxalate diet.
Is supplements for IC?
Supplements for IC, there's something called Preleaf, I believe. It was a type of a calcium or a bicarb.
I probably wouldn't recommend very high dose vitamin C. Right?
No. Yeah, adding a pinch of salt to carbonated beverages to make them flat.
It's really also, you know, things like chondroitin sulfate, glucosamine sulfate, and N-acetylglucosamine.
N-acetylglucosamine.
Quercetin, rutin. These are anti-inflammatory flavonoids.
And antihistamine, too.
Right.
Was helpful.
Right.
So Deborah says a small bit of liquid Benadryl seems to help symptoms, but I'd like to avoid antihistamines. I do have alpha-gal mammal allergy.
Whoa, that is weird.
That's a blockbuster right there.
That's huge. I mean, that's
a
tick-borne illness that is associated with sensitivity to all mammalian meat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would mean that you'd be sensitive to beef, pork, and lamb.
Yeah.
But also whale meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Whale's a mammal, right?
It's like, wait, I thought that was tuna. No, it's whale meat.
It's a whale.
That's a dolphin that got into the net. Oh my God, it triggered my symptoms. That, you know.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So Deborah has that particular allergy. So she avoids all mammal sources except for some dairy, which has not caused problems for the last year. Deborah is a 75-year-old female, healthy, with no particular medical conditions and first time IC symptoms. Maybe time for a workup.
Right.
Yeah, maybe time for a workup. That alpha-gal mammal allergy, is that something that would eventually go away?
Or is it a lifelong thing? It seems to be a thing of great long duration.
And a tick-borne thing, which is just scarier and scarier every summer that I think about tick-borne anything besides Lyme.
Man, I got to keep those ticks away from me while I'm at the grill.
Yeah.
Grilling
You got to wear a hazmat suit to go outside in the
grilling
woods.
Grilling those burgers. You know, it's like.
So much for forest bathing if you have to wear a hazmat suit.
It's like the tick saying,
there.
Stop eating our brethren. Stop eating our brethren. We'll bite you and you won't be able to eat any beef anymore.
They say it's good to walk in your bare feet, connect with the earth.
We're supposed to be earthing, but then...
You got to wear a hazmat suit to go walk in the woods.
Put DDT on your feet.
Oh, no.
Okay, wait. We're going to do something a little different today. We're going to pause now to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. So here goes. Listen up.
Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine continuing free resource to you, and ain't nothing better than that. So, what's our next question, Layla?
We have an email from Mark. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I have intermittent gastroparesis, which is helped by Reglan, but I would like some suggestions on what kind of
definition,
supplements. Yeah, gastroparesis.
Intermittent means from time to time.
Hmm.
I knew that because I had to look it up, but I knew that. And gastroparesis, that means like a paralysis of your gastro, i.e. a paralysis of your GI tract.
Right.
It's not
slowing
really
down digestion.
A paralysis. It is a
like it's a stoppage.
Yeah.
And it's a term that's bandied about quite a lot these days when people have incomplete stomach emptying or inefficient digestion.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be demonstrated by a motility test. You swallow a substance and they see how quickly it passes. And if it is stuck, basically, you've got that stuck syndrome, gastroparesis.
Mm-hmm.
It occurs sometimes in diabetes when you don't have adequate nerve innervation of your stomach. You know, the nerves in the feet become desensitized and you have numb toes and feet sometimes in diabetes. But you can also have a messed up nervous system internally in diabetes, especially long-term type 1 poorly controlled diabetes.
Right, right.
Not so much type 2 diabetes. So anyway, yes, gastroparesis is the term that's applied here. So the treatment for that is medical, with something called metoclopramide, which is Reglan.
Reglan.
Is that what he's taking?
Yeah. He's just wondering if he could take a supplement or do something
it's
different.
It's not such a great drug, Reglan.
Yeah.
You know, Reglan causes so many side effects that I think almost recalled. There's certainly a lot of warnings about the use of Reglan.
What's interesting is Mark is a 58-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
He actively avoids grain, sugar. He lives a relatively active lifestyle. Not on any prescription medication. Have no other glaring health issues. I'm assuming Mark is not. Does not have diabetes.
It's unclear why he has that.
Yeah, this intermittent gastroparesis. So, first of all, I'm wondering, would Mark be helped by some digestive enzymes?
That could be.
That might be something. Right there, some pancreatic.
Is there a right kind of diet for these kind of people?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a great one.
It's a low-fiber diet.
It's a low-fiber diet. It's a low-fat diet. And
because fat slows digestion.
Exactly.
And that's why fat is helpful for satiety.
Yes.
Is it kind of, you know, it sticks to your ribs. It literally sticks to your ribs.
Yeah.
Not literally, but so, you know, figuratively, it will stay with you longer.
Mm-hmm.
Fat slows gastric emptying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a way to speed up gastric emptying is to have like a kind of a milkshake kind of thing and go
right through, or have a very a low fat, high in processed carbohydrate, even things that digest quickly, rapidly absorb carbohydrates. That will be some of the way to go for somebody with gastroparesis.
There are Reglan lawsuits about tardive dyskinesia.
Oh, no.
It's a medication that is actually related to some of the antipsychotic medications that cause this. You know, it's sort of a pill rolling thing that you have with your fingers, or like a a lip smacking. And people have this sort of, you know, it's annoying when you talk to them, you know, mm-hmm. that they have the tardive dyskinesia. It can be caused by antipsychotic medications. And Reglan is a related class of drug.
Yeah.
That's, so it's nasty.
It is nasty.
So this person uses it selectively, not all the time or in high doses.
Mm-hmm. Typical lunch, he says, would be a protein shake with organic egg whites, mixed greens,
a shake,
unsweetened almond milk. You could do that. When you pre-digest your food in the blender, that may be the way to go.
Yeah.
Because you want rapidly absorbed nutrients that way. You want rapidly absorbed proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, and just keeping it on the lower fat side may be helpful to keep away any nausea. I think nausea is the biggest complaint for people with gastroparesis. So that's something that, and possibly constipation. Taking some digestive enzymes would also be helpful.
Restlessness, sleepiness, dizziness, fatigue, confusion.
These are the side effects of Reglan?
Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay. So, yeah, staying away from that as much as you can would be certainly helpful. Yeah, keep active. That's always a good thing. I guess this is something that Mark kind of has to live with, unless it's misdiagnosed. Intermittent gastroparesis.
Sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just doctors just put a label on something, but it's not that helpful. So I think the future of this is, let's say you have really severe impairment of your peristalsis and basically it's not just gravity that takes the food down. It's the peristalsis. It's the movement of your gastrointestinal tract. So it's an undulating movement, which is interesting. You know, when they open patients up while I was studying surgery, even when they open patients up under anesthesia, you could see the sort of undulating waves of their gastrointestinal tract as they, you know,
even
sort of,
under anesthesia. That's
yeah,
wow.
Sort of like that sort of, you know, boa constrictor movement of the you know, bolus of food or whatever was being digested. So I think the future of this lies in electronic pacing. And the heart, we can pace, and we've been pacing the heart ever since I was a young medical student, and before there was
pacemakers.
And in the future, I think they will have GI pacemakers, but apparently the GI tract is much more complex and more difficult to figure out proper pacing than even a complex organ like the heart.
Wow.
So, but in the future, I think they'll address this problem with some very sophisticated electronic pacing device. And I'm sure they're working on it. This will also help patients who have very, very severe constipation.
Yeah.
Which is, see, gastroparesis more refers to the stomach. Colonic stasis is constipation. And in the future, they'll maybe be able to pace people. You'll say, okay, I think I'll have a bowel movement now. You push a button and like, you know, okay, I'm, you know, here we go.
Wow.
It'll, you know, it's like putting the top down in your convertible.
Oh my goodness. That's really something.
It's like, wait, really somebody hacked my gastro pacemaker.
Yeah. I can't go to the bathroom. Somebody hacked my pacemaker.
It's those damn Russians.
Oh,
so there's
no.
Right.
Right. Right. China.
Chinese. Right.
Oh my goodness. So, Mark, we hope you feel better soon. Thank you for your email. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We better settle things with the Iranians before they develop a lot of make those devices very widespread, because
hacking into our
right
gastro pacemakers.
Okay. So, so enough futuristic predictions.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Give us a prediction of what we're going to talk about in part two.
I have lupus and Sjogren's. What supplements should I not take?
Lupus and Sjogren's. That's a very niche question. All right, we'll tackle that when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence, capably assisting me in providing answers to your questions. Radio program at AOL.com. is the destination, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.